And there goes the full-time whistle for it. Serene are promoted into League One as all the players have managed to storm onto the pitch. I've had a word with someone very special. I won't be breaking any copyright by telling you this. Yes. Derby, Sunderland, Ipswich, you're going to be eating hummus at the new lawn next season because Forest Green are in League One.
Welcome to the Heavens Devils podcast, a Forest Green Rovers podcast by two Americans who don't know what they're talking about. My name is Nathan. This is Sean.
Heavens Devils podcast. Saturday, on at the Bolt New Lawn. Sealed the deal against Bolton. Feels like the start of a new season.
Let's go. Let's go, Shimmy. What a match. What a match against Bolton Wanderers.
Bolton Wanderers. Yeah. Again, it's, you know, starts with a B. Like, the name means you're just walking around somewhere aimlessly.
Exactly.
Which is what Bolton seemed like they were doing on Saturday, right? Gotta be real on that one.
Oh, all right. Well, let's talk about it all in a second. But first, Shimmy,
Speaking of new seasons, right?
What's that?
Speaking of new seasons,
yes, it is now hoodie season, baby!
Yes, it is.
Which means I'm busting out my Settlement 84 hoodie. I cannot wait. I'm going to wear it today. We have a little chat with a man named Ian Birchnell.
Oh.
Giant chat today. We'll talk about that in a second. But I'm going to rock my hoodie for that. Anyway, back to Settlement 84. Settlement84.com, incredible clothes. A clothing company that cares about the environment, cares about animal welfare, matches the ethos of Forest Green Rovers, and they make some fire threads. So go get you some fire threads like my hoodie. I gotta post a picture of myself in the hoodie so people know what I'm talking about. But check out settlement84.com. Fire threads.
Fire threads to keep you warm.
Fire threads to keep you warm. Huge pod today, Shimmy. Huge pod. Because we have the manager of the Forest Green Rovers on the pod. Ian Birchnell is here, Shimmy. I'm so excited to talk to Ian.
Ah. Same.
Oh, man.
Ian Birchnell is here. Is Birchball finally here? We finally going to do it?
We're finally going to turn this season around. It looked good on Saturday. We'll talk about that in a second. But I'm so excited for this chat because I'm fascinated by him. Because there are two very different views on Ian right now out there in the Forest Green world. The people who know him, players, staff, media, great football minds like Rich Hughes, they all love him. They're defending him like crazy right now. You know, people who know Ian say he's just the warmest guy. He's kind. He's humble. He's very cerebral about the game of football. But fans have quite a different opinion of him, almost the opposite idea of who Ian is. They kind of paint him as a guy who's a little cold, maybe a little arrogant, emotionless, maybe in over his head in this league. Completely
like Birchbot 5000, you know? Like
maybe what's that?
Birchbot 5000, perhaps.
Yeah, so I'm excited to actually meet him today and like have a conversation with him and kind of help all of us, all of Forest Green community, kind of get to know him a little bit better.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's the thing. Ian Birchnell, from a supporter's point of view, of course, we're way over on the other side of the Atlantic, but he's been a bit of a cipher. You know, we know he's faced a lot of adversity at the beginning of the season with injuries, with almost a huge turnover in the squad. But, you know, who is Birchnell? You know, Ian Birchnell, who is he as a person? What is his football philosophy? And how does he see that fitting into Forest Green Rovers? Hopefully we can learn some of that today.
Yeah, with Ian, we are going to talk all about his coaching philosophy, his day-to-day schedule, man management, the current rocky, let's call it, relationship with the fans. Results, performances, a whole lot more, you name it. So I cannot wait for that chat with Ian. It's going to be so fun. So great to finally get to meet him and get to know who he is and you know, have a clear picture of that, not just what we hear from everybody else, but we'll actually finally get to see it for ourselves. So I cannot wait. And then we also have Steve from the Ale and Vale podcast to help us get ready for Saturday's huge match against fellow promoted side, Port Vale. So I don't want to mess around too much here, Shimmy. This is Ian's pod today. We got to get him on ASAP. So let's not mess around. Let's quickly talk about the amazing performance Saturday. Talk about the women's match. Talk about a few other little items. And then we'll get to Ian Birchnell. So first, Shimmy, Saturday. Forest Green Rovers 1. Bolton Wanderers 0.
Forest Green, Forest Green, Forest Green.
Forest Green,
Forest Green.
Full screen.
A brilliant performance.
Yes.
And result on Saturday that caught most people by surprise. Credit to the team. Credit to our guest today, Coach Ian, who hasn't got a lot of credit lately, but this was a well-prepared and organized team on Saturday. The defense was excellent. Cooley Bailey had an instant impact in his return. Marquez, JMT, reliable defenders. Connor Wickham doesn't belong in this league. Skeletor Corey O'Keefe just continues to impress. And it's Halloween season. Perfect time.
I thought Skeletor was Don Bernard's surname.
Oh, that's true, yeah.
According to Big Time Tommy, at least.
Shout out to Big Time Tommy. Luke McGee, man, continues to be a hero.
Yes.
Josh March, just a menace to society. High-octane MPH helped manage the game out. Great to see our friend Captain America, Ben Stevenson, have a great game. Just a positive day, Shimmy, all around. From the fans to the pitch or the field. Actually, I should say fans of the field. The alliteration sounds better than fans of the pitch. From the fans to the field, Shimmy.
From the punters to the pitch.
There we go. It was the perfect response to an extremely disappointing last few matches, Shimmy. We showed courage, resilience, passion, organization. Encouraging stuff, Shimmy, against a very good team.
Yeah, you know, we just had that little bit of hope, that little bit of a toehold that we knew that Bolton wasn't great on the offensive end. They themselves have had difficulty scoring. But, man, I would not have imagined that scoreline. I would not have imagined 3 points for us. And, you know, the Bolton Ulan hasn't exactly been a fortress for us so far this season. So, you know, we're a little bit on the, you know, pessimistic about things. But it pays to be optimistic, as we know, because, man, the boys, Ian Birchnell, the fans, everybody showed out on Saturday. And just really happy. It was a great start to the day for us over here in New York City.
Yeah. Oh, great day. Great sports day for me personally as well, until Sunday when the Browns lost. But we had my Ohio State Buckeyes beat your Michigan State Spartans on Saturday as well, Shimmy.
Yes, they did.
And then my Cleveland Guardians won first round of the playoffs. They're on the next round of the playoffs, playing against the Yankees here in New York. So it was a great day all around. But most importantly, Forrest Green got a huge 3 points. And then on Sunday, just to follow it up, the anti-royalist FGR women dominated Royal Wooten Bassett. I think I'm saying that right. 3-0 to move up to fourth in the table. Charlie Golins added 2 more goals to her league-leading tally. And the third goal was put away by Estelle Randall minutes after she got on the pitch. What a start to the season for the
FGR
women, Shimmy.
To Ninka Rucker again, I think, hooking up Charlie Golins on her first goal.
If you want beef, then bring the ruckus. Ninka Rucker ain't none that with... Yes!
I always got to bring that out.
Every time.
Ninka, yeah. We have to.
Oh, my God. The FGR women are flying right now. You'll love to see it. Forrest Green men are also flying right now. If you
moving up the table, both.
That's right. We're both flying up the table. This is good times to be a Forrest Green Rovers fan. And speaking of good times and being a Forrest Green Rovers fan, Shimmy, the documentary, which came out this week, was awesome. I watched with my wife on Saturday. Nice little chaser to the Forrest Green victory. Excellent documentary. And I'm not just saying that because I'm a narcissist and we are in the documentary.
Yeah.
By the way, we were so drunk, Shimmy. Yeah. I'm shocked that they could use any footage of us.
Same. You know, speaking of chasers, we probably could have used a few.
Yes.
But we had none.
I think actually you didn't do too bad of a job, Shimmy, considering how many Jaeger bombs, courtesy of Jamie Flagg, and beers were in our system.
Right.
I don't think you did a too bad job.
I think
in the beginning when you're like, the green stuff, the vegan stuff. That's why we follow this club.
So, yeah, it's a great impression of me, by the way. No, I think you're right. You know, I think I was just riding high no matter what on the excitement of actually making it to the UK and being out there. So I think, I was drunk on the experience as well as a little bit of cider and lager. We can't lie about that.
There we go.
And those famous Jamie Flagg Jaeger bombs. But, man, just so excited to see everybody. And I think it comes through, but maybe that's why we end up in the film. We just know how much this club inspires excitement in us. So
yeah.
It was incredible, man. Incredible to relive those memories a little bit.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It was just so fun to relive last season, just a magical season through this documentary. Awesome to see the behind-the-scenes footage of Rob in the dressing room.
Yes.
Cursing at the players. It was great. It like got me fired up. Really cool to see Ian at the start of training camp as well. I love the little bit they did on March. You know, quit his job to work in a factory. he was working in a factory. Sorry, he quit his job at the factory to join Forest Green Rovers.
Right.
Not that he quit Forest Green Rovers to go work at the factory. The reverse. He quit his job at the factory to go work to go play at Forest Green, and to score the league winning goal. An incredible story. And his working background, his work ethic. You can tell he doesn't take anything for granted, and you can't help but love Marchie for it. And it was just nice to see that little bit of Josh March in the doc. So last news here, off the heels of our Don Bernard episode a few weeks ago, where he admitted to being a bad gardener, and we suggested he get some gardening mentorship from Vice Chairman Phil Butterworth. Phil heard the pod and answered the call and sent Don Bernard a cactus with instructions for how to care for it. And in the words of Phil, all I ask of our club and of you, Dom, is survival. Incredible.
Yeah. Incredible motivational tool.
Yes.
If you need to get into the other players a little bit, also a good motivational tool. Just wield that cactus around.
That's right. Yes. Dom's the man to do it too. And hopefully when we win the league this year, when we win League One, instead of holding up the trophy, we'll hold up Dom's cactus.
There we go, baby. There we go. Right, we're going to grow tall like those saguaros.
Let's go. Let's not mess around, Shimmy. Let's get straight to the man. Our manager, our gaffer, Ian Birchnell. You ready, Shimmy?
Oh, I don't know if I'm ready, man, but let's do this. So excited.
Let's do it. Here we go. Ian Birchnell, let's go. Ian. We welcome to the pod the Mandanavia from Scandinavia, the inventor of birch ball, which you might be surprised is not a style of football, but actually just a ball made of birch wood. Very sustainable. Buy it on Amazon. He took over at the Norwegian club Viking at the age of, I forgot to look this up, 2016 minus 1983. 33 years old. Yeah. All right. Yeah. He then took on a role as head choreographer, playwright, and costume designer at Ulstersunds Musical Theater Company in Sweden. And now he's back. He's come back to England on a conquest to reconquer Mercia, Wessex, and Northumbria in the name of Odin and for all of Valhalla. Since coming back home, he was back-to-back National League playoff loser at Notts County. And most recently, he joined Forest Green Rovers, where he just this past Saturday, he orchestrated the innovative birch wall that kept a clean sheet against sixth in the table, Bolton Wanderers. He is the namesake behind the Birchnell outchance. Sit back, relax, as we deliver you some ibuprofen to ease the pain of this season. Will he convert us to faithful members of the Birch Church / cult? We'll find out soon. Ian Birchnell, welcome to the pod, Ian.
Thank you. That has to be the best intro that I've had ever on the podcast.
Really? I thought that was like verbatim what how stadium announcer Joel Wagstaff before the games.
That was good. That was good.
Do you call it ibuprofen in the UK? Or did that joke make no sense?
No, that was good. Yeah, ibuprofen.
All right.
Okay, all right, good. The pain reliever, you call it that too? Okay.
Yeah.
Beautiful, beautiful. Yeah. Okay.
We got to admit that Bolton result really was the ibuprofen for us so far. It felt great this week.
For all of us. Yeah, believe me, for all of us.
Yeah. So let's get into it. Well, also I mentioned there the Ostersund's musical theater company, because after the Burton Albion loss, long before we knew you were going to be on the pod, I went down a Ian Birchnell rabbit hole, which I'll explain a little bit later. But when I did, one of the most fascinating things I found was the musical theater bit at Ostersund. So we'll talk about that later. But yeah, it just blew my mind.
yeah, mine too.
Yeah. All right, well, let's get into the pod. We're going to talk about coaching philosophy, day-to-day schedule, man management, your relationship with the fans, questions from the fans, results, performances, and a whole lot more. It's going to be a great conversation. But first, we got to warm you up. We got to warm all of us up. Get us in the mode for a conversation with a little game. Are you in, Ian?
I'm in, yeah.
All right, you've already shown poor judgment as a manager because you don't know what you just agreed to. And also by coming on this pod, I think you showed some poor judgment. All right, let's see how good your knowledge is of Forest Green Rovers history, American Revolutionary history, and players who played for you history. In this little game we play every week called Is This Guy One of America's Founding Fathers, an ex-Forest Green Rovers player, or an ex-Ian Birchnell player? Hit the theme song, Chom.
Oh, theme song? Is it just the national anthem? Oh, say, can you see?
There we go. All right.
Is he a rover or a Swede? All right.
Let's go. There we go, Jimmy. So how this works, I'm going to give you the name of a person. You tell me if that person is one of the signatories of the United States Declaration of Independence, an X-Force Green legend, or someone who used to play for you. Got it?
Okay.
All right, let's roll. Here we go. First one, Benjamin Scott Harding. Did he sign the Declaration of Independence? Was he a Force Green legend, or did he play for you at one of your previous jobs? Benjamin Scott Harding.
Didn't play for me. I'm going to say he's Forest Green player.
Oh, 1-1.
Nice.
Yes. Who could forget the Benjamin Harding era? 9 appearances in midfield for the Forest Green in the 2005-2006 season. Magical, magical 9 appearances.
I haven't forgotten it.
Let's go. Let's go. You're 1-1. All right. Here we go. William Floyd.
USA.
He's on fire. Let's go.
My God.
Born in 1734, a land speculator from Brookhaven, New York, he was, in fact, one of America's founding fathers. Here we go. Next one.
Also known as Pretty Boy. William Pretty Boy Floyd.
Pretty Boy Floyd. Here we go. Felix Holberg. Felix Holberg.
Oh, yeah, he's one of my players. Yeah.
Oh, I can't believe you got that one.
Must have said, yes. Yeah.
A very, very
3-3, Ian. You're killing
midfielder.
It.
You're on fire. Here we go. Oh, here we go. Sotirios Papayannopoulos.
Oh, Sotir. Yeah, yeah. One of my players, yeah.
Oh, was he? I tried to throw a wrench because I thought he left right before you started.
He left as I came in, yeah.
Yeah. He was one of the...
Little crossover.
One of the, like, 10 superstars who I feel like left the club as soon as you started, right?
Yeah. As soon as Graham Potter left and the Europa League had finished, everybody left, yeah, and I came out. Yeah.
All right, one more. Button Gwinnett. Button Gwinnett.
That's USA.
Oh my God, this guy. Well, all right, it could be an FDR player. He was, though, definitely a signer of the Declaration of Independence. Yeah. Born in 1735, he was a representative of Georgia to the Continental Congress, and he committed high treason against the king when he signed the Declaration of Independence. But why I say he could also be a Forest Green Rovers player, I was going to give it to you because he was actually born in Gloucestershire. He immigrated to America from Gloucestershire. So there's a chance yeah. He played for Forest Green too. We couldn't find any records saying it wasn't, so we'll go from there. All right. Perfect. Ian, that was amazing. What was that, 5-5?
5-5.
That's decent. Man.
Bravo, bravo.
Man, no hits.
Setting the bar high there.
Yeah, I mean, yes. I thought Sotirios was like a founding father, and he founded like the first Greek diner in the United States way back when. But that's because Nathan...
Yeah. A lot of Greek diners.
So I think even Nathan and I would not have gotten 5 out of 5 without the answers in front of us. But that's probably the American educational system at work. But and man, that was awesome, Ian.
To be fair, two were gimmies there because they were players of mine. So
yeah.
Felix Holberg.
Yeah, Felix Holberg.
That's how you say his name? Holberg. All right. Holberg, so let's kick it off with one more little game, and then we will get into some football talk. So, Ian, we want you to kick it off with 2 truths and a lie, a little game where you tell us 3 things about yourself. 2 of them are true. 1 of them a lie. You think you can do that? And we will guess the lie.
Okay.
All right, here we go. 2 truths and a lie with Ian Birchnell.
Okay.
On you.
Okay, I was once used in an advert for a national betting company.
But they had to
Photoshop my hair because they thought I looked too much like John Terry.
I can see that. All right.
All right.
After a few beers on a Sunday, walking home, I bought a horse and left it in the garden for my wife.
Okay.
Okay.
All right. I love it.
The third one, I opened the Davis Cup tennis tournament by playing the first set.
Oh, wow. All right.
Okay, which year?
Oh, there we go.
2017.
Davis Cup. Okay, Davis all right. Cup. So,
wow. All right.
Sham, I have an idea. Do you have an idea, Sham?
Yeah, I think so. But you go ahead, Nate. Let's go. What do you think?
You've never been right, though, before, Sham.
I know. So, I have an idea, right. And that he is the wrong.
I'm going to go with the horse, and here's why. I know you're a tennis player, Ian, so I can... Maybe buy the Davis Cup. I don't know. Actually, maybe that one's to.
I was thinking the Davis
the horse
Cup.
The Davis Cup, because I feel like the gambling thing. Yeah, you know, you're involved in football. Gambling's a big part of football. I feel like that one's true.
All yeah, excellent anecdotes. So those all walk the line of absurdity in real life. So well done. But I'm gonna go with the Davis Cup, playing the first
Davis Cup. I'm going
first
horse. Set. One of us got to be right. There's no way that the lie was the first one. What is it, Ian?
The lie is, after a few beers on a Sunday in the pub, I bought a horse on the way home.
Let's go!
My streak continues. Zero right, ever.
The losing streak continues, unlike Forest Green's losing streak, which ended on Saturday. Let's go. All right, so we're going to talk about your career in Scandinavia a little bit later. We'll do like a little Game of Thrones, House of Dragon-esque time jump, because for now I want to focus on the present, and then we'll go to the past a little bit later.
Yeah.
So, Ian, just walk us through a day in your life. What's a normal day look like for manager Ian Birchnell? And no details too boring. Okay. I need to know this, actually, because I just started a career mode as a manager on FIFA 23. So as a new manager myself, I need to know how I should be structuring my day.
Okay. Then it's an early start, 5 o'clock.
Five.
Oof. Yeah, wow. Because it's a couple of hours commute to the training ground. So then I get up in the morning, 5. Get on the road, coffee en route, but 2.5 hours, and then get to the training ground.
Wow.
Meet the staff at the training ground. And then we plan the session. We go through video clips. We talk to the physios. We discuss the players' availability. Plan out how the whole day looks for everybody, their roles, and what we want to try to achieve on that day. Players come in about 9 o'clock, they get in the gym, they turn the music up. depending on who gets in there first, depends on the quality of the music.
Do you have Final Cut on that? Can you?
No.
Don't touch it.
No, I get I, that's one decision I don't want to have to make.
Smart man.
Yeah, and then it depends. Every day is different what they might do in the gym or yoga or different things that they do in the morning. And then we normally have a video meeting with the players, like, between 10:30 and 11, talk about either the past game or the game that's coming up. We look at the opposition, then we go out and train. Normally get out on the pitch about 11 o'clock. Trainings, depends what it is, but between an hour and a half, come back in, lunch, then maybe some individual meetings with players or just some discussions. And then we have some more work with in the afternoon. We tend to like look at the next game. So work with the analyst and, just plan, basically watch football a lot. Every day can be different. Like in a transfer window, maybe it's different. Maybe there's a lot more going on with transfers in and outs, meetings with agents, players, things like that. But once all that settles down, then you get into a routine of just working with the players and the staff really on a daily basis. Today was a little bit different. Like then you've got the press to do. So you have to schedule some time to do press work and things like that.
Wow.
But yeah, generally as a coach, you're fairly routine, like in what you do when you get up, when you meet, when you train. And then just based on the time and moments in the season, it can change a little bit what you do on a daily basis.
Wow. And you 2-hour drive. That's wild. Where are you staying?
I live Cambridge.
Cambridge.
So then to get across to Gloucestershire, it's about 2.5 hours. Yeah.
Wow. What street? Exactly. Just in case, you know,
fans may want to visit or
in case fans want to come over, share some opinions.
I was trying to think of another street there.
Just look for the horse. You got to say, just look for the horse in the front lawn.
It's a decent commute. But what I do is normally we train Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. So I come up on a Monday morning and then stay over in and around the training ground up until Wednesday in the evening and then come back Wednesday night. The only reason I've come home tonight is because we play Peterborough tomorrow. And it's actually quite close for me. So then I got to come back.
Nice.
But yeah, normally I'm staying up there 3, sometimes 4 nights a week.
Nice. And I think one thing that you've changed this year is the players have Thursday off. Mm. What was the, what's the reasoning behind that?
Well, I mean, like when I was abroad, we only took one day off a week. That was typical. So if we played on a Saturday, we'd be in on a Sunday and off on a Monday. And then we'd train Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. But everybody lived really close to the stadium. Mm-hmm. So like the Thursday would typically be really light, just set pieces and tactics. But it meant that we could have two heavier training days where we can get more intensity, more loading into the players. When I came back to England, it is changing a bit, but generally, like the first club I went into, Notts County, I asked them why Wednesdays were off. And they just said, because we've always done that. Mm-hmm. And I think even historically, it goes back to, you know, before when probably it wasn't quite as professional as it is now in terms of training and nutrition and stuff like that. Players went out on a Tuesday night.
Right.
So they'd have Wednesday off.
Right.
And I think probably it's like a little bit of history still with that. And then they don't want to let the players go out on a Wednesday if they've got Thursday off. But it's changed a lot now. And for me, if we train Tuesday, normally you come in on a Monday, you have like a recovery session. Tuesday is quite an intense day, and then you give them Wednesday off. Then Thursday, you're already thinking about the game, so you're tapering down the training. Whereas I like to try to have two more intense training days, which means we can train Tuesday, Wednesday. Then they get a break on a Thursday, and then Friday can just be a short session, like tactical work, ready for the game. So it's to try and load them a little bit more.
That's interesting. It makes sense too. So actually, on that note, tell us a little bit more about Birch Ball, which we could call it. You probably don't call it, but I know you have like a blueprint, like a document where you kind of have like your defined coaching manifesto, you know, your methods, your style, your training, your tactics, your vision for what a club should be and how it should grow. Talk to us a little bit about your coaching philosophy.
I mean, it's just things like experiences that I've had from, I've been coaching 20 years. You know, I started it at Leeds United with the grassroots coaching schemes and stuff like that. And then the young academy players at Leeds, and like over kind of almost 20 years now, I've progressed through age groups and of course spent 8 years abroad, top leagues out in Norway and Sweden. So all these different experiences coming against different coaches, players, system styles, and you decide what you want or what you think the game should look like. And of course, like you strive for that, and sometimes it doesn't happen. This season, often so far, it's not happened exactly how we want it to, but it takes time, and you have to have a way that you think is the right way, and you have to go for that. And, you know, I have before been pushed to change by people above in clubs that I've been at before. And you always regret it if you do, because you want to stay loyal to what you do. I like to try to play attacking front foot football. I like to pass the ball. I like to try to put myself in the crowd and see how they want to see the game. And I know that not all of the games that we've seen so far would be echoed with that, but I'm also conscious of the context with which we're working. It is a big step to where we are. So to try to play that football as you step up can mean that you can be open or vulnerable. But I don't want to come away from it, because I want us to learn from it and improve in this way of doing it. So it's sometimes you have to have some short-term pain, and we've had a bit of that this season. Mm. But I think we're clear on how we want to try to improve. And I think at least if you have an idea, you always can go back to that as your reference point for if it's not working, how to fix it. If you keep changing what you believe because of the players that you've got or the situation that you're in, then I think it can be a dangerous game, because it's hard to go back. So I think you've got to find your way and stick with it.
How much is of your job is tactics, and how much of management is just the ability to build and maintain and foster relationships?
I think it's probably 70-30, 80-20 maybe, like in favor of people skills, and like tactics is maybe 20% of the job. Like, you need to know the tactics and you need to have an awareness of it. But I just don't think the tactics work if you can't sell it to the players. The first thing you need to do is have a relationship with the players and try to understand them on an individual level. They're all different. They're all striving for the same thing, to play, to achieve, to get better. And when you have a squad of 20 plus players and only 11 play, you've really got to be able to manage the group and the staff and the fans and the board. So I think people skills is probably number one. And then
Don't forget pesky podcasters too. You got to manage those.
And of course, yeah. and those also. But tactics then for me comes like after you've got that bit right, you know.
So talking about building a team, tell us a little bit about the recruitment process. Like, what are you looking for in players if you're able to have a decision in the type of players that we recruit? Is it more about fitting your system? Is it more about technical ability? Is it about personality, character? What do you look for?
Yeah, I mean, they're some of the tick boxes without a doubt. Like, I mean, character's big. Like, character's really big because I think if you're gonna do well, you need the right people in the building. That goes for players, staff. You need to have the right people that are willing to pull in the same direction. So, like, character's a huge thing that we look to try to recruit. And I think our recruitment, we have good people in the building. We don't have so many kind of experienced senior players. It's quite a young group, really. Mm-hmm. Like, I think the average age is 23 and a half of the squad. So it's quite young, really, for this. But that's also part of the blueprint of the club, is that we want to try to take younger players, develop them, see players that have got a higher uplift and potential, so that then it's about coaching them to become better. Really experienced players with hundreds of games often come at a premium and immediate success is demanded. We need to try to develop things over a period of time. So character is important. Potential is important. I think I like football brain, football clever players that can understand the game. I think that's really important. And of course, then you need some physicality in the team, you know, whether that's pace or power, but you can't have only pace and power. So you've got to make sure the players complement each other. So depends a little bit what's already in the building as to what you need to add then.
Do you do anything currently, or have you in the past done anything to kind of encourage players to strengthen themselves kind of off the pitch as human beings? Like for example, I know Lewis Thomas and Jamma, they both take classes and they've earned degrees in their spare time. Is that the sort of thing that you encourage, you know, of the young men? And in what ways do you look to kind of improve these guys off the pitch?
Yeah, massively. Like, it was quite common in Scandinavia, actually. A lot of the players were quite driven for what they were going to do next. And I had players in Viking that were like, have been Icelandic national team players that were coming towards the end of their career and were using their afternoons doing master's degrees, sitting up in the exec boxes, just working and working. I've tried to encourage players to go and help out with the youth teams, get their coaching badges. I think sometimes football can be so all encompassing and you live in a bubble and everything is about the game and the result. And of course it doesn't always go well. And when it's not going well, it can be a really tough place to be. Mm-hmm. So to have other avenues for the players to focus their minds, I actually think is healthy for them. They should do things like that and challenge themselves away from the pitch as people, because ultimately players play up until they're, let's say, 35. But then there's a lot of life still to go and they have a lot of spare time, actually. Like, maybe not that they can do lots of physical stuff, but because they rest, but there's other things that they can do that can enhance themselves. So I think players that are proactive in that are one, are smart, and also two, good to have about.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. And I think, yeah, we have some leader like Jamma, like Lewis Thomas, and they try to spread the message and hopefully, you know, it gets out there because football is not forever. No. Unfortunately.
And this is essentially Nathan's roundabout way to ask you, what musical should we look forward to next summer? What's going into rehearsal?
Is that your backup plan?
That is not, yeah.
No, we're gonna get into that. So let's travel back to 2012. Let's talk career now. You head over to Norway to some team called Sarpsborg 08 Football Falafen in Sarpsborg, yeah. Norway. So why did you move? Why did you move to Norway?
Do you know what? I'd done like 7 or 8 years in the academies. I've been at Leeds United, at Bradford City, up to kind of like the under 16s youth team age groups. And I've been with the University of Leeds, like running the football program there as head coach for like 7 years. I kind of felt like I didn't know where the next step. I wanted to push myself as a coach and see if I could go and work in a first team environment. But I felt like, having not played, being quite young, I was 29 then, I didn't see that anybody thought I was ready or had the capabilities. And then the opportunity came to go abroad. Brian Dean had been working with me, ex-Premier League player, had been working with me at the university. And Brian got the chance to go out and manage. And he basically said, look, he had a lot of experience in football and kind of in management, but actually hands-on experience on the grass coaching, probably not nowhere near as much as me. So he kind of identified that and said, look, I need you to come out, assist me and lead all the training, put the blueprint on the team. So it's a great opportunity for me to coach, do a lot of work. And if it goes wrong, someone else gets blamed. So that was great. Right. Like, it was a dream job for me.
Sweet deal.
So, so it was brilliant. You know, Brian's a great guy and he took me over there. And it was an easy decision because the team had just been promoted into the top league, only for the second time in the club's history. First time they went straight back down. So we were kind of tasked with a remit of staying up and we did that. And in the second season, we went into the top eight and it was... like a brilliant club. Absolutely. Just, I couldn't have asked, like, first opportunity to get into first team football. The players, the staff around, like the fans, they were so good. Even we had a really tough time during that first season. We went in the summer, I think we went 8 games without winning, but the fans were so good. They were brilliant. Like I've only been back when I've played against them. And even then they gave us such a great welcome. Wow. Brilliant football club to go to. So I was quite lucky, really, to kind of land there with my first senior job, if you like.
That's awesome. And wow. And you have a family, you're married. I think you have 3 kids. Mm. How did your family react to this idea of leaving your home in England and moving to Norway?
Well, at the time, we had no kids. So
That makes it a little easier.
And the TV's not great out there. So then we ended up with 3.
Looking for the northern lights, that's all.
Yeah. No, so my 2 daughters were born out in Norway. And then when we came back from Norway after 5 years, we had like 6 months back in England before I went to Östersund. And then my son was born in England. So, we got the 3 kids, the new baby, and then I got the offer at Östersund in Sweden. And I was, come on, north of Sweden it is now, off we go. So, she's been dragged around some places all over Scandinavia, but it's been a good experience for the family.
That's good. So let's talk Östersund then. So, you get the job at Östersund in Sweden, you replace some guy named, Graham Potter.
Is that a Scandinavian?
Scandinavian guy.
He's still about somewhere, I've heard. Yeah.
Yeah, that's what I've heard too. Playing on Wednesdays at night around Europe. Anyway, so in your first season, you place Graham Potter, and in your first season, you lead the team to a 6th place finish, 49 points, just 1 point and place below the club record, which was set the year before by Graham Potter. And you also matched his points per game record, which is crazy impressive on its own. But it's even more crazy if you dig a little deeper, because on the face of it, you can say, okay, oh, Graham Potter built this great team, handed it over to Ian. Okay, Ian, kept it steady. But no, it's a lot more than that. All the big stars left the club when Graham Potter left the club. I don't know, 10 or so key players, maybe more. You had one of the lowest budgets in the league. One of the youngest squads. You're basically a youth team, based on my research. And despite all that, you still performed in the top league just as good as Graham Potter. That is crazy. That is wildly impressive. And I want to bring it up just because I feel like it's something most of us fans, myself included, had no idea about until I did my little deep dive a couple weeks ago on Ian Birchnell. You can easily look back. You can see the records. You can see the table position. But you have to really dig to understand the context. Of what you accomplished there. That's crazy.
It was, it was impossible to follow Graham, really, because he'd been there for 7 years. He'd taken them from like absolute obscurity to a team that was performing in Europe, beating Bilbao, beating Hertha Berlin, beating Arsenal at Emirates, Galatasaray, Pau. It was crazy for this small club in the north of Sweden to do this. But of course, it had to come to an end, and Graham left, and rightly so. He's an unbelievable football manager, went to Swansea. And the chairman called me. I was 35 when I went there, and Graham was 35 when he first went to Östersund. And although I'd been working top league in Norway for 5 years, I think he wanted a bit of continuity in terms of maybe character, just of course, a little bit of style of play and things like that. But and I think he saw some potential in me. So the chairman brought me in. But of course, when I got in there, it was like Fouad Bacharou was top player, went to Malmo, Sotiris went to FC Copenhagen, Saman Godos went to Amiens, Ken Sima went to Watford. It was like, wow, okay. Wow. Like, I first got in there and we had like Ken Sima, who's at Watford now, played in the Premier League. And within my first week, the chairman was like, yeah, so Ken's going to be leaving next week. Saman's going to be leaving next week. And Bruinori, the captain's leaving next week. And Sotiris is going to FC Copenhagen and Bacharou's going to Malmo. So I was like, okay, right, this is going to be a challenge. Yeah, but of course,
good luck.
Yeah, and they've just finished fifth, 50 points, and you're like, right, okay, this is a challenge then. But we brought a few players in and just kind of had to. I remember speaking to Graham on the phone, and he just said, look, it is a rebuild. It's a real rebuild of the team, but at a completely different level to where it's ever been rebuilt before. So it's brand new. And yeah, like, I think sixth in that first season, I think it was, in my opinion, it was underrated in Sweden. It was, and a little bit overlooked, because the club had done so well. Everything was always going to seem a little bit less.
Right.
But I was very happy with sick. And the second season, the same, you know, we started, I think it was the best start to a top flight season the club had ever had.
Yeah, I saw that the first 8 games, you set a record for points.
Yeah. So we were flying. But then in the summer, we lost quite a few players. We'd signed Ravel Morrison on a short contract. He left. And like Dino Islamovic, Curtis Edwards, these are good players that were top players in Allsvenskan, went to some good clubs. We lost all them, and then the chairman had some problems off the pitch, basically stepped away. And once he stepped away, it was carnage. Like, there was problems sometimes with payments of players, and at that point it was like, right, we got to weather a storm. They actually kicked us out of the league. So even though we were in the top league, because of the economic plight of the club and the chairman having some off-field issues, they actually relegated us to Super Etten, which was like crazy for us. We'd stayed in the league, so we'd managed to stay up that season still. But at the end of the season, they actually sent the fixtures out and we were in the league below. So wow. we had to appeal it, and then they reinstated us back in the top league. So it was... The club was messy at this point. Yeah. The chairman has stepped down. And then when COVID hit, for me, I knew that it was the right moment to come back to England and step away. And sadly, I see now they're bottom of the league below. So the bottom's fallen out. And it's sad because it's a nice club and good supporters. But
it's modern football in that way.
It's modern. Yeah. And that can happen, you know. But for the 2 years I was there, I was happy with the way in which we to be able to not only keep the team in the league, but do it quite comfortably with the quality of players that left. I was happy with that.
Yeah, it's unbelievable when you really look into it and you see the context. It's remarkable what you did there. And it feels to me like there's some kind of parallels between that time at Östersunds and this time at Forest Green. You know, at Östersunds, you're punching above your weight. You know, you have one of the lowest budgets in the league. You were in, no disrespect to Östersunds because it looks like a beautiful place, but you were in the middle of nowhere in freezing cold Sweden, north of Sweden, where I imagine it's very difficult to attract players. You also just lost coaching staff, as you said, chairman, legendary coach Graham Potter, who got them promoted, and you lost so many important players, key players from the previous season. And it just seems very similar to what's happening, you know, now at Forest Green. We lost, you know, so many key players from last season. We just lost our director of football. We are in a new league, you know, lower budget. I don't know. Do you see these parallels too?
Yeah, absolutely. You know what? My old assistant, Brian Wake, over in, he's over in Denmark now, coaching in Denmark, but he watched the documentary and he left me a voice note and he said, I see so many similarities to Östersund when I look at the way the club and the potential of the club. So, there is a lot of common themes there, like big players leaving. That's normal part of success of a small club. Like, the minute you have success, the players that have brought you that success can get the next step for themselves and they go. But of course, then you have to rebuild it, but not rebuild it in the same division, rebuild it in the division above.
It's more challenging, yeah.
Yeah. Now, I started Östersund with 5 wins and a draw in the first 6 games. So I haven't quite got there now with this. So that would have been nice, but I haven't quite started with that. But I also know, you know, I think I said in the press the other day that, you know, towards the back end of the season, if you'd have said that you know, you were going into League One, but losing Nicky Cadden, Jack Aitchison, Ebu Adams, Kane Wilson, and then you'd have Bailey Cargill, Doakes, Jammer, Matty Stevens, injuries. All out injured. I think that people would go, okay, that's going to be a big challenge. And I don't think it shouldn't take away from the fact that we should have more points than we do. We definitely underperformed in some of the games, and that's disappointing. The Exeter game was really poor, and the two late goals. But I do think if we had that little bit more strength in depth and balance available for the full period of the season so far, I do think we'd maybe have, let's say, 3 or 4 points more. I think if we had 3 or 4 points more, the table would look totally different. So I try to keep a context of where we're at. We are developing. We are finding our feet in a new league. And it's a challenge. Like, it is a challenge. The step up is big. But the players are working so hard. Like, they are a really good set of lads that want to do well for the football club, and they don't want to go out and underperform, but it's a challenge, and
monumental.
Sometimes we're not quite hitting where we want to be, but I do think we've shown in patches like the Bolton game, Bristol Rovers away, Charlton away, the Lincoln game, even Ipswich at home, I thought we were good, you know,
played well.
Yeah, there's some good games that we've played in against strong teams, but we've also had some underperformances. So that's where we've just got to get a bit more consistency now and try and work with that.
Yeah, and that's why it's so important that you've shared with us, Ian, like what you went through with Östersunds, because it gives us confidence to know that you've weathered adversity and tribulations before, and knowing the depth of that, because you said the challenge is so monumental moving up to League One with some historic clubs. But man, we're feeling better already.
Saturday helped a lot too.
It helped a lot. Yeah.
Yeah. It helped us all a lot. You know, I managed to, it just feels a relief more than anything when you come away from that, because you know, there's always pressure is like you have to learn to try to deal with the pressure, but the more games you don't win, the bigger the pressure gets. So
yeah,
it's a big relief, but it was a great performance from the players, I
think. Oh yeah.
Ooh, yeah. We'll talk
about
a League One squad for sure
in a minute. Yeah, it did. It felt like the first four games felt, which we'll talk about in a little bit. But one last thing, talking about weathering the storm, as Sean just mentioned, one last thing about Östersunds, then we'll come back to England. And that is, of course, weathering the storm of putting on a musical theater performance, which you had to do at Östersunds. Tell us about that, please.
Okay, so when I got there, I flew to the chairman called me and he said, you've got to fly, like, I'm flying you over to Östersund. We want to talk to you about the job. So I flew over there, met him, and like, I was ready to present what I thought about football, but this was not the direction that the chairman was going. It was like, he's going to tell me how Östersund is going to develop me. And like, this is why this is the place for you. And it was great. Like, I listened to him and he was engaging, and it, like, basically he brought Graham to the club, and him and Graham created this idea about how to do things differently, that to challenge football players outside of their comfort zone to do things that they didn't think that they were possible. So he said to me, look, the last couple of years we've done like a rap show, so every player's written a rap, including Graham, and like rapped on stage in front of like 1,000 people in a theater. Wow. they've done a performance of Swan Lake, they've done all sorts of crazy stuff. So he said, look, this is part of what we call our culture project. So we have like monthly workshops with the players where they learn new skills, they do things outside their comfort zone, and it all culminates in, at the end of the season, you have like, the season finishes, all the other clubs go on holiday. We stay for a week and basically rehearse in a theatre for a week and then put a show on for the fans. And it was like, and I'm telling you, it was three, like on the Saturday, it was three shows, like afternoon, like the matinee and the evening. Wow. And the theatre was full, like 500. And honestly, the thing, when you start it, the lads are like, we're not having this, you know. So we did a musical theatre production. So it was like, I think me and some of the players opened the show with, we sang The World's Greatest. And then there was like individual solo performances. There was dance routines. There was... but watching the players rehearse and sing, it was just like, you can just see, especially imagine losing a couple of games and then saying to the lads, right, 4:30, lads. We've got dance lessons.
We're gonna dance it out.
But you know what? They're so reluctant to do it. And then you get that week before the show, and you kind of everybody looks at each other and goes, "Lads, we better sort this out because this looks a mess. Or like we are embarrassing it. Like this is a shambles, and people are paying to watch this. Like we've got to put a show on." So like I think in one of them, I was playing lead guitar in the Sex Pistols singing "God Save the Queen," just like the most ridiculous stuff. Yeah. Honestly, the fans loved it, and when the show finishes, it's a professional guy who puts it all together. And when the show finishes, honestly, it feels like you've won a game, or bigger than you've won a game, because the players have been able to achieve something together that when they started said no way could they do that. Like no way would you believe that player is going to sing in the state. And I think that was Graham and Daniel's like idea was, if you can sing solo in front of 1,000 people, you can play football in the Emirates, no problem. Like to train the brain to function under extreme pressure and duress. Like Daniel was in the army, so he came through this. So that was why it was his idea, but it was written in everybody's contract.
That's amazing.
There was a section in our contract about the culture project and that you must participate. And this was not, it was non-negotiable. Like, so every player, everybody had it. It was crazy.
What about, So right when the season ends, that's usually when like contracts are up and like you decide if you're going to keep a player or release them. Mm. For you guys, was it like after the performance? Is that when contracts are up?
No, but some players had already signed at other clubs, but they still had to do it. Yeah, because the season finished in November. So if you didn't do it, then you weren't getting paid in December.
Wow,
fair. And that was your contract cut. So
Christmas.
So we had to do it. Everybody did it. But some players, I think one player was just a tree, just stood at the front of the stage. It's a tree the whole way through. You know, he didn't move. It was just a tree the whole way through. But but some of the lads were talented, you know, like the captain that we had, he could sing. He just rolled out with his guitar and just like, it was like a crooner, just took the whole audience and we were like, oh, here we go.
Oh, Dokes on our team. Dokes would kill it. He could be our lead singer.
I think so,
He's got a voice. That is amazing, though. It's first of all, it's hilarious. Like, I could see that being a TV series, a comedy. Oh, it's amazing. But you're right. It really does. Like, it does take the players out of their comfort zone, which is so healthy for, you know, just to do as a human. And it shows vulnerability, you know, it makes them, you know, overcome something that they never thought they'd do. And like you said, if they could do this, like you're like, okay, playing in the Emirates, no big deal. I know how to play football. I don't know how to sing, but I know how to play football. That's awesome.
Yeah. I don't think that I'd be able to get Connor Wickham doing interpretive dance.
I think he'd be the tree.
He's more of a tap guy. He likes tap.
We'd have a go. But I do think and I know Graham's never done it. He never did it at Swansea or Brighton. But he'll use some of those principles of, look, let's see if we can bring players outside their comfort zone some way, but maybe not quite as extreme as that. So I think the fundamentals of it are really good.
You got to phrase it this way. If you're going to be Mr. Tree in the musical, you're going to be the sturdiest part of the wall that's set up.
That's right. There it is. Tactics.
Exactly.
Oh, imagine Connor Wickham tears his ACL like in a dance number. Has anyone ever got injured during the dance?
No, I don't think so. I don't think they gave it enough in the rehearsals. You really get to see like who's willing to like
put it out there.
Yeah, you see the characteristics of the lads when they're outside their comfort zone.
I love it. There's no. I'm sure you don't know this, but we've had several players on, and we've made them sing on the podcast. Not a joke. Many of them have had. I mean, it was a joke them singing, but we made it like multiple players have sung on the podcast, and it's hilarious. It kills me every time. I don't know if listeners like it, but it cracks me up every time. Anyway,
so Ian, you might consider making players come on our podcast. That's definitely going to put them out of their comfort zone.
Exactly.
And make them feel under duress.
That's good. We need a bit of that.
All right, let's put a bow on this. Let's put a bow on Scandinavia. So you leave Scandinavia, you come back home, you get appointed at Notts County, you lead them to the promotion playoffs, only to lose 2 years in a row in just heartbreaking fashion, both times in extra time. And the latest one, 95th minute equalizer at against Grimsby. They got a 95th minute equalizer. Grimsby Town took it to extra time where they scored another late goal in the 119th minute to go on and eventually get promoted to League Two. Brutal stuff. And kind of more parallels maybe at Notts County, because it seems like you lost two really important players in Kyle Cameron and Richard Brindley for a little while.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's tough. But I guess overall, just how do you think – go ahead. Sorry, Ian.
No, it was tough. The playoffs were really tough. Like you say, one or two key players, defenders. Last year was a strange season because we had some like periods of poor results, but COVID was still floating about, and we had a few games where suddenly we'd lose three players because they tested positive, and we still had that like. We went through like a period where we beat Grimsby away, beat Stockport, beat Solihull, beat Dagenham. Like we were on a great run, and then we hit December. And games were off with the weather. We played one league game the whole of December, just as we were in our... And then we found ourselves in like eighth, even though we'd been playing really well, but we had like four or five games in hand. And I think just psychologically, we were always chasing. And that's quite a tough thing to do because you just can't miss a beat then. But I had it's a brilliant football club. It's a brilliant football club and good people inside it. I was really grateful to get the opportunity there, but I really wanted to try to bring them back to the Football League, but it's a tough division to get out of. And I felt, you know, I had two shots in the playoffs, both was extra time, both was really fine margins. And looking at another National League season, like the energy to go again, it's a tough division. And yeah, I thought that we had the team in a good place. I think we got over 80 points and scored a lot of goals. So, but I think Luke's come in there now and done a brilliant job, like helped, like somebody else comes in, sees what you've done and then adds a 10% to it. And hopefully they can take the next step now. But it was a good learning experience to get back to England and get into English football where I've been away for 7 years. And I think a lot of people looked at the Swedish league and it was, I was constantly being referred. I was close to quite a few league jobs, but it felt like I was always a left field appointment, which seems strange with like 7 years experience in top flights and working with some really, really good players in good leagues. But because I hadn't been in England, I think I needed that to show that, okay, I can translate it back. And Notts County gave me that platform.
Yeah. So just one more like general coaching question and then we'll move to Forest Green. So you mentioned earlier, you know, you were never a professional player. Yeah. And you know, you were so young too, when you got your first like professional head coaching job. I know you've been coaching for a long time before that, but I wonder if you ever feel like a sense of kind of imposter syndrome, like a sense of discomfort or not belonging. Did that ever creep in?
Yeah. Yeah. All the time. When I think you get that a little bit because you know that your background's a little bit different to the conventional route. So I do feel sometimes like you have to prove yourself or, you know, justify why I'm here, which maybe players that have played 500 games feel like they should be there. This is the natural progression. It was never a natural progression for me. And I don't necessarily think it was in my head to become a manager. It just kind of each step something happened and then I seem to take it, you know, each time I was challenged, I seem to take it on. But yeah, sometimes my background is different and my pathway for coaching has been different. So sometimes, yeah, you get that a little bit. And I think, yeah, that's maybe normal.
Does that make man management a little bit difficult? Or have you found ways and strategies to bridge that with players and kind of get your philosophy across?
Well, I'll tell you what I experienced, like when I started in the academies, was that I found that a lot of coaches that I played, and this is a big generalization, but a lot of the coaches that I worked with that I played would often refer to what worked for them. So or remember a coach that was good for them that did this thing, which can be really powerful, you know, like you're drawing on your own experience. But at the same time, what I found as an alternative, because I didn't have that reference point of what worked for me as a player, because not many things did. I would be able to listen to the players then and ask them more questions and talk to them a little bit more and engage on that level. So I think it just developed a different skill set for me. So I came in and I like when I went to Sarpsborg, one of the players that we had, there was a French player, Jeremy Bertold. Jeremy had played like 8 years in Lyon, won 4 French league titles and had come to us. And I was thinking like, is he going to want to listen to anything that I've got to say? But do you know what? I put training sessions on and they were slightly different to what he'd done before. And he was engaged and wanted to know why we were doing things or like just wanted to talk football. And if he thought maybe I could help him improve 5%, like that's what a player wants. So
buy in. Yeah.
Yeah. So I think what I've learned is how I've learned to develop my understanding of how players feel in certain situations because I've never been in that situation. So then I've had to learn that by watching the players and how they behave and talking to them about it. But, you know, probably as a manager now, I must be close to 200 games and as an assistant as well, probably 350, I would say. Wow. So like, then I've seen a lot of games and seen a lot of reactions of players, young players coming in, senior players coming to the end. And like, that's given me my foundation now for understanding players, I think.
Yeah. Oh, that's awesome. Well, so let's move to Forest Green. Let's talk Forest Green. Let's talk relationship with the supporters. Let's talk some fan questions. We'll ask you some fan questions in a minute. But before we do, a quick segue. Let's break this up a little bit with one more stupid game. Here we go. Yeah. So Sun Tzu in The Art of War said, if you know the enemy, you know yourself. You need not fear the result of 100 battles. So let's see how well you know your enemy, Ian Birchnell. We're going to test your opposition research abilities right here. Have you been studying film? How well do you know our League One opponents? Let's find out. Get ready to sing the theme song, Sean. Okay. Let's find out in a little game called Name the League One Team based on the shirt sponsor.
Okay, good.
So, Sean, sing. I'm supposed to sing.
Name the League One Team. Name the League One Team. Who's their shirt sponsor?
There we go. Perfect.
There we go.
It's Name the League One Team based on the shirt sponsor. So I'm going to name, I think you get the idea, but I'm going to name one ridiculous League One sponsor. You tell me the team. Here we go. Oof. First up, easy one. We'll start easy for you. Service My Car. I thought it was going to be easy. Service My Car.
Go on.
That's the name of the... Oh, you don't know?
No.
All right.
It was Bolton.
Who we just beat. That's their shirt sponsor. Service My Car. What's that? Bolton Wanderers. Did I break up?
Bolton. Yeah.
Yeah, okay. Service My Car.
Yeah, then I should know that.
you're too busy watching the game and not looking at the kits.
Yeah, I don't. Yeah,
yeah. And that was their problem on Saturday. They were too busy worried about their cars.
Do you know what? I'm trying to picture what it looks like. Then I can try it. So I'm trying to picture what it looks like. The logo.
Terrible sponsor.
It's terrible.
Yeah. And terrible. It's off color. It's neon green. Yeah. Bad sponsor. Bolton Wanderers. Speaking of bad sponsors, here's the next one. Right. Carpet Right.
Lincoln?
No, Exeter City.
But that's okay. We wanted to forget that game, so it's okay.
That's true.
Yeah. I've erased that one. You know why?
Yes, that's fair. That's fair. All right, here we go. Wham.
Who?
Wham. Wham. Wham.
Wham.
I don't know what it is.
All
right. Accrington Stanley.
I'm absolutely bombing on this game.
We're 0-3. Here we go. Like, you're going to get this one. I guarantee you're going to get this one. Here we go. Plus sign, minus sign, equal sign, divided by sign, multiplication sign, tour, the reverse PEMDAS.
Sheffield Wednesday?
No. Ipswich. It's the Ed Sheeran.
I'm blatantly like not looking at any of the shirts.
That's actually very heartening that you're actually paying attention to the game. You were watching the positioning, the strategy, the play of the ball. This is a good thing.
I tend to look at the back of the shirts when I'm analyzing so I can see the numbers that they're on. I don't look at the front.
Oh, man. Well, yeah, there we go. The Ed Sheeran reverse PEMDAS shirt.
Yeah.
Helpful shortcut here too for you, Ian. If you're ever trying to do linear algebra and you want to solve for a variable, you just use reverse PEMDAS. So remember that whenever that comes up again. Might come in handy. Here we go. Last one. I think you're going to get this one. I think. Tuffin's Supermarkets.
I've even heard of these places.
It's no Waitrose. No, it is no, it's no Waitrose. I'm trying.
All right, just give me a clue. We played it.
Yes. In fact, we played every team that I mentioned.
Yeah. So that's what I should know. Burton.
Not Burton, no. Shrewsbury.
Shrewsbury.
Tuffin Supermarkets. Tuffin all right, Ian. 0-4, what is that? 0-6 on shirt sponsors.
I started too good with the 5 out of 5, the 9.
Yeah. But like you said, Ian, we're actually relieved that you don't know any of these. Yeah. That shows your attentions are in the right space. The right part.
This is a positive. Okay. Yeah. On the fourth screen, why did you take this job, Ian? And why are you confident that you're the man that's going to keep us up?
When it came up, obviously the playoffs had just finished at Notts, and there it was, felt like, okay, maybe it's the right time for the next challenge. When Forest Green came in, I spoke to Rich at the time, and he painted a picture of the club. He told me where the club's been, how it's got to where it is, and where it hopes to go. And obviously, you know, this is where we're at in this part of the club's development. I like the thought of being part of a club that was quite progressive, that was so sure that I was the right person, because that was important, because I felt like they knew me because they'd done a lot of research on what I'd done before. And the challenge of getting into League One, regardless of smaller budget or smaller club, I know that, like, okay, League Two is not that dissimilar to the National League, I don't think, in terms of level. But there is a big step when you get to League One. And I just think, as a coach, you sometimes want to be able to test yourself and see where you're at. And I have to say, like, the top league in Sweden, we play big games like Malmo, AIK, Hammarby, like 25, 30,000 big teams with international players and top coaches. And like, that was what I've been used to for 7 years. And I feel like League One is closer to that, like going and playing in bigger arenas against really, really good coaches, because the coaching level in the league is very, very good. And I said, okay, that's a challenge for me, and I want to try and take that and show what I can do. So I knew that it would be a difficult task, without a doubt, because I saw the outgoing players. But I just felt like I met Dale, and I met, you know, James Mooney, and I met Rich, and I felt like there was good people in the building. And I just think that that's an important thing. Like, I've been taught to many clubs and been around clubs where I've not got that feeling, and that's a dangerous thing. But certainly when I got in the building, I felt like it was good people in there. And I think as a start point, that's a great place to be.
Yeah, 100%, man. And it is good people. That's what we found ever since we started following this club. All right, so I want to talk about the fans' faith in you right now, and I'll take you on a little journey, my own personal journey, because I think it might, you know, mirror some of the fans' journeys so far this season. So you got appointed, and then it's been a bit of a roller coaster. You know, you inherited a team that lost 3 or 4 of its best players, and then you've lost a ton of key players, you know, ever since due to injury. But despite that, I think the season started great. First 4 games, we were flying. I know there's 2 losses in there, but one is against Ipswich, who they have a great chance to win the league. And by the way, we outperformed them in the second half. We played better than them in the second half.
Very hard, then.
The second loss in the first 4 was Plymouth Argyle, who, even though the score wasn't pretty, they are a team packed with championship players.
Yeah.
And Premier League, I mean, their goalkeeper is going to be a Premier League player, and they are title contenders. And apart from the score, I mean, it was a good game. I mean, we looked good. We dominated possession, same number of shots on target, more corners, higher XG. And so at this point in the season, you know, I'm an Ian believer. This is awesome. Like, we're staying up. I had no question in my mind we're staying up. And then the wheels started falling off. The terrible performance, you know, at Wednesday, losses to teams that we can't lose to, you know, if we're going to stay up, like Shrewsbury, Morecambe, Exeter City, the 10-man Burton Albion, you know, those Those were tough. And now a narrative is starting to form among the fans that, you know, maybe we're getting worse each week. Maybe Ian doesn't know what he's doing. And, you know, especially after Burton Albion. And I started to buy into this too. And I think a lot of the fans kind of felt that way. But then personally, after Burton, I just remember, you know, I remembered how much everyone who knows you well has, you know, praised you, that personally, you know, privately, publicly. Everyone who knows you well believes in you, and especially Rich Hughes, who I trust with anything football wise. So I was like, okay, what are they seeing that I'm not? And then that's when I kind of did just all this research on you and your past. And I might be the only fan in the world who, after the Burton Albion game, I actually changed my mind. Yeah. And I was like, Burchnell in. I believe in this guy. Yeah. I gotta be the only one after a 3-2 loss to against 10-man Albion who changed his opinion to positive. But you know, listen, I was in the
Burchnell out after the Burton game. I joined that camp.
You were so, singing along with the Burton.
Yeah, yeah. I felt that pain. Yeah.
Yeah, so you know, I've looked into the context, you know, surrounding it, and anyway, I say all that to say this. I think there's kind of two perceptions of Ian Burchnell right now. One of those comes from inside the club and from the people who know you, and one is from outside, from the fans. You know, I've spoken to media members, staff, players, Rich Hughes, and I've heard nothing but great things about Ian Burchnell from all those guys. They say you're kind, humble, insightful, a very cerebral coach, a great football mind. Just yesterday, as a matter of fact, we spoke to Rich Hughes, and it wasn't meant to be about you at all, but he went out of his way to just continue to praise you and say,
he owes us money actually. So, yeah.
But anyway, so, you know, Rich Hughes fully believes in you, and that's not the first time we've heard it from him and from others we've trusted all throughout the season. So that's kind of the perspective from the people on the inside who know you. The perspective from the fans is quite different though. And I from them, it's a man, they see Ian as a guy who's cold, who's maybe a little bit arrogant, who's a little emotionless, a manager who doesn't appreciate them. You know, you don't always clap the fans or acknowledge them after matches. And some of them see you as a, you know, maybe someone who's out of his league, out of his depth here. And so there's these two completely different opinions of you that are, polar opposites. And I guess, you know, the question is, you know, first of all, what do you make of all this? And how do you get fans to believe in you the way that the staff and the people who know you do?
I mean, ultimately, fans will believe when you win games. That's what, that's the core business, isn't it? So, I work with players every day. Every day, they see the work that I'll do on the training pitch, the way that we approach every game, the way that I talk with them, work with the staff. So it's really important to me what the players and the other staff and the people around the club, because they're what see the actual work that goes on. Like, the fans will see 90 minutes and then perceive what the work is through the week. And it's not always a reflection of what you've done. The amount of hours that get put in and the amount of sacrifice and the amount of time I spend away from my family. And I know the fans may say, you know, they like more passion. But for me, passion is like spending four nights away from my three kids and like working long hours. So that
the cost,
cost. And that's like putting everything into the job that you do so that you can do it right. And I'm not a insane screamer shouter. I've done it. Like, I was really emotional. Like, the first job I got, first few games, I was so emotional, I was so desperate to win that I came away afterwards and I was going, I don't remember much about the game and I don't know what I actually influenced in the game. Like, I'm really trying hard to like see. So now I try to step back a little bit and watch and like not be kicking every ball, because I sometimes think that by doing that, I'm going to miss things that maybe are valuable. So that's how I operate, but that's, everybody's different. But it doesn't mean that I don't have passion or that I don't care or that, and I think the only one time that I've not gone to the fans to clap them was after Burton. But I did feel that for 90 minutes from the first goal went in, it was actually it was only Burchnell out, sacked in the morning for 90 minutes, and that's tough to hear. And when the security have to keep the fans from getting to you at the end of the game, I thought it'd be more provocative to go out and clap them than just go in and leave it. So it wasn't because I'm arrogant or a lack of respect for anybody, because I have so much respect for, I mean, fans that travel. Sometimes I can't believe it, you know, when you're so far away and it's a Tuesday night and the fans are there. And, you know, pretty much every fan set that I've worked with, like abroad, Östersund, Viking, Sarpsborg, I had a great relationship with them. But it was built over time. It wasn't straight away. And I think they see over time that I'm an honest person that works hard with integrity, that I think tries to be a good ambassador for their football club. I can't promise we're going to win every game. We just can't. Like, we're going to lose some games, and we are going to lose more games than we did last season. And it's going to be a battle. And I think you're right that we started the season so well, and then we've had a blip. Every team's going to have blips through the season. For me, like, I've been disappointed when we've played the teams around us that we haven't. But that's the only time when I think the expectancy's changed, and then maybe our approach has changed a little bit. When we haven't had that expectancy, Bolton, Charlton away, Lincoln away, like these games, with the shackles
have been off.
Sheffield Wednesday. But even Sheffield Wednesday, I sat with the manager at Bolton, and he was like, I watched that game, and it's insane how it was 5-0. Like, they scored a couple of where we've just switched off. But what we learned there is the level of the top teams is you cannot switch off for a second, because Barry Bannon's going to put a ball absolutely on point and they're going to finish it first time. So you can't switch off. But actually, there was moments in the first half after like 1-0 and 2 where we had the ball. I was like, actually, we've been brave here. We're daring to play at Hillsborough. It was just our momentary lapses and how hard we got punished that game was a real sharp lesson for us. But I totally get it. Like, I totally understand the fans will be frustrated. They want to win. They want to try to get some momentum. And then we've had these setbacks and the Exeter game on Sky. But on top of the players that we were missing, you take out Corey O'Keefe and Christian Marquez as well because of suspension and international. We were bare in that game, and we got, again, we gave them a goal early. And then psychologically, I just think that we were not in a great place. So the team's really reflected on it, and we're getting players back. We feel in a better place, but it's going to be a long season. Believe me, it's going to be some tough games in there. But, you know, I want to build a good relationship with the fans. I want to be open. It's why I'm on here. I like it. Whenever I see the fans, I'll spend time talking or signing autographs or anything like that. But I'm not a big for show, like, kind of coach, but maybe that can be perceived as emotionless or arrogant, but I know it's not, because I have plenty of emotion in there.
Yeah. And I think, again, your actions, you know, speak loudly here. Like you say, you're away from your family 4 nights a week. That is passion. That is emotion. That is like
commitment.
Commitment. Exactly. And you mentioned Burton Albion, and that was a toxic environment. So I don't think anyone can blame you for that one.
De-escalation was a wise move by your part.
right.
You know what? This can go worse. So let's not do that.
But kind of on that note, like, you know, how do you just mentally escape from football? How do you relax? How do you wind down? Especially after that. I mean, not only is it a heartbreaking loss, but like you said, fans are singing against you, calling for your head. How do you mentally deal with that and escape from that?
To be honest with you, I was driving back from Burton, and I was supposed to be, we had a babysitter, and me and my wife were going out with some friends, and we were getting all together. And I just said, I can't go. I can't go, because I can't put a face on. Like, I just, but my poor wife went by herself, and I just sat in a room by myself when I got back, because I knew that I didn't want to be with anybody then, because it was a rough day. That was a rough day. But normally, just, you know, when I come home, you see the kids, and they really don't care if I've won or lost. They just don't care. Like, they're just happy to see you. And then you just think, okay. And like, I remember before the Bolton game, there was a clip of like a bridge being burnt down in Ukraine or something.
Right, yeah.
And somebody went, you know, it could be worse. It's not that bad, you know. And you have to sometimes go, actually, you know, I do a job that I'm lucky to do. I enjoy it. Some perspective. So I try to just escape with the family, with the kids, like not think too much about the game, but it's hard to switch off, but try your best to immerse yourself in that. And I think then you switch off.
Yeah. And hopefully things turn around and we just get a more positive positive environment everywhere, positive atmosphere. We need to support, you know, you guys, you, the team. Being negative is not going to, it's counterproductive.
In the long run, absolutely.
But let's get to another fan question. This one's about system and setup. So I guess, what is your ideal setup? And like, if we had like the perfect personnel for that system, what would it be?
I think systems can be a bit overrated. Like, you see, okay, some teams just play one system exactly the same way religiously over and over and over. Typically, those teams have got the best players, like Man City or Liverpool. They're not huge. They might have one or two personnel that can change it. But I do think if you've not got the strongest squad, you have to have more flexibility because you have to kind of adapt also to the opposition. So, like, at the moment, we're using a back three. The club's had a back three for a long while, and a lot of the players are drilled in that. So I'm happy with back three. I played that a lot at Notts. We changed, actually, in Notts from 4-3-3, 4-2-3-1, back three. So we switched a lot. But I like pace, wide areas. I like to be able to challenge with the wing-backs offensively. I like players that are comfortable on the ball in the middle of the park. But how you formulate them depends on the individual characteristics. So I wouldn't say that I have a huge preference. Depends on the qualities of the players that are available.
Okay. So we'll close out with the kind of the serious ones on this right here. With a positive. And I hope Rich Hughes doesn't mind me sharing this, but I feel like it's a useful thing to share right now, especially for everyone to hear, the fans to hear. And I'm sharing from memory, so I hope I don't screw it up. But in his message yesterday, where he like just went out of his way to praise you. We weren't talking about you at all, and he just went out of his way. And he was just like, you know, I'm so thrilled for Ian to get the win against Bolton. I know fans haven't seen it yet, but he's a great guy. He's a great manager. He's been dealt a very tough hand. Keep supporting him. Ian won't let you down. And just wait. And you know, that's basically the same thing, you know, we keep hearing from so many people who work with you daily. And I just hope we all, you know, everyone comes to see that moving forward. And then, I mean, when Rich Hughes says that, you know, he's not even at the club anymore.
We tend to believe it. We believe it.
That's nice. I mean, I buy it 100%. I appreciate that a lot. Yeah.
And let's go to another positive here. Bolton Wanderers, giant win, a great performance. Like we said, that was a League One performance, man. We play like that, we will more than stay up in this league. What happened there? It was just beautiful organization, excellent build-up play, passion, heart, resilience. Like, what do you think led to this performance and result that we so desperately needed?
Great coaching.
There we go.
Yes. There we go. Not arrogant at all.
Not arrogant at all. No, do you know what? We broke the team off into smaller groups at the start of the week because we do a lot of video meetings, and I kind of said, look, and I got Dan Connor, the goalie coach, to work with some of the set plays and some of the defending in and around the box, and me almost. I just was a bit more passive at the back because normally I lead a lot of the video meetings and the tactical briefings, and just to step back and sometimes let the players talk a little bit about what they're feeling about, where we're at and what they want to do. Argue a little bit, disagree on a few things because we needed to. We broke Doyle, my assistant, took a lot of the midfielders and the more attacking bits and got into a bit more detail with them, and then we went to work with it on the training pitch and just said, look, okay, then we've talked about what we need, now we've got to do it. So we worked hard on it on Tuesday, on Wednesday, on Friday, and then I'm just so happy that the players deserved that win because they've worked so hard through the week. And like I say, even when we've not performed well, it hasn't been because the players haven't desired it. It's just football can do that to you sometimes, but they work so hard at it. And I thought it was, I was happy for them for the work they put in. So I just think it was good. We had, you know, a lot of open and honesty in the training ground about where we're at and where we want to go. And that helped a lot, I think.
Love it. Oh man, you got us all like on cloud nine again. It was, it really turned the season around. And so many fans too, like put a pause on their negativity. I mean, there's still a lot of people out there who aren't believers yet, but it, I definitely, I mean, I heard, I had texts, I read things where people are it really changed their perspective. So it's awesome. It also shows how fickle all of us are as football fans that game by game.
What have you done for me the past 90 minutes?
Exactly.
But I'm also a football fan and also can be, well, I'm far less fickle than I was when I was watching now. And like sometimes, my dad is a big football fan and he's a Leicester fan. And like, you know, Leicester aren't going so well. And my dad might say, could be time for him to go. And I'll say, hey, like you're meant to be back in the manager here. We don't go for the coach anymore.
I love it. All right, so a few more light fan questions here. Lighter tone here from our guy Lee. What is your favorite chant?
Chant.
Yeah.
For us, Forest Green.
For Forest Green, yeah.
Oh,
you have.
I mean, obviously the Connor Wickham one's good because they tend to sing it after we've scored. So that's a good thing.
All right. All right.
You know, the right thing has happened.
Noted. Yeah. Noted. So it's not Birchnell out, not sack him. It's the Connor Wickham
one. Oh, no. I think we can sideline them for a bit.
Hopefully. All right. Let's sideline this one. all right. How long until the people's champ, Matty Stevens, is back?
Oof. Soon. He was out running again today. He's getting better, but I still think on the pitch maybe early January. But I think he's going to be training with the team maybe late November, early December. And I just think like seeing him lace up a pair of boots and be out on the pitch near the lads is a massive boost for everybody because he's such a top guy. Such a top guy.
I love him. Love him. We're huge Matty Stevens fans. Yeah. By the way, speaking of singers, he's been on the pod singing a few times. We'll have to send you that audio later. All right, Connor Wickham, how do we keep this man past January? Do we need to start like a GoFundMe, make him the highest paid player in League One history? How do we keep Connor Wickham?
Do you know what? We just have to keep him playing, keep him smiling, keep him enjoying football because I think that's important. Like, and I think if he's enjoying it, then we have a good chance. But at the moment, we've got him in a good place and he's scoring goals. And I think that's important for a player that they feel wanted and that they're performing well.
It's a catch-22, though. We want them to be good, just not too good.
Just not that good,
Not good. And that's the thing. We get that big percent of like excitement because the technical quality that he has, the goals that he scored. Yeah, we just go wild on our end.
But what I loved about the Bolton game is that was not a technical goal. That was just a tap-in. It was just beautiful build-up play, great delivery by O'Keefe. And that's like, you know, that's the kind of goals we need. So that was another awesome moment on Saturdays. It wasn't a magical Connor Wickham goal. It was magical team goal.
Yeah, it was a great team goal,
So, all right, give us a quick tour. You were tatted up. Tell us about your tattoos. If they're not too personal, maybe they're...
any musical theater themed tattoos?
No musical theater theme
yet.
I got like my kids' initials and some things like that.
Nice.
And then I have some on my back, and I have the man in the arena.
That's a great quote. You have the whole quote.
Yeah.
Oh, that's awesome. That's such a great quote. Yeah. Who was it we were talking to? One of the players we had on recently. We talked about that quote. I don't remember who it was, but anyway, awesome quote. And kind of on that note, John, a fan from Scotland, by the way, international here. Yeah. Well, I don't know. Is Scotland considered international? I don't understand the United Kingdom structure.
They have their own soccer team, so they're international.
All right. He asked, if we stay up and if Matty Stevens returns and scores more than 5 goals this season, will you join John in getting a Matty Stevens tattoo?
I don't know if I can commit to that.
Fair enough.
Not disingenuous.
No. Okay.
Give us the straight story on that one.
Yeah.
All right. So we're almost done here. We got 3 more questions and they're quick ones. So first, actually, this isn't even a question. This is just advice, Ian. I don't want to overstep here, but as a fellow EFL manager on FIFA 23, let me give you some coaching advice, Ian. First, do what you did against Bolton every week. Just reuse that game plan.
Let me just write that down.
Write it down.
Just select Bolton. You know, just move it over to the menu and stuff.
There we go. Yeah. Next and last, play Dom Bernard up front. If you want a second striker, fine, but Dom doesn't need it. He's all you need on the attack.
Yeah.
The best goal scorer we have. You saw it against Southampton U21s. You saw it against ourselves in the Sheffield Wednesday match. Yes. He had that beautiful header. Yeah. He placed it right past Luke McGee. And Luke McGee, he's a great shot stopper. So we love Dom Bernard. Dom Bernard is your golden boot winner.
We know him as golden boot winner Dom Bernard.
Okay.
So that's right.
That's what he goes by on this podcast.
That's right.
All right, we're closing out here. Just a couple questions here. First, what is the joy in this work for you? What is the joy in managing for you?
I just like working with the players. I like working with the players and seeing them, if they can improve, or you can see the product of the work at the weekend. I think that's the best thing. Like I like now when players that I've worked with pick the phone up and just either ask for advice or something like that. And maybe I'll work, like there's players that I still keep contact with that are playing, some playing in the Premier League that I work with in Norway. And it's like, okay, yeah, that's good. It's great to still know that, okay, then I had a bit of impact there and that's good.
That's awesome. That's awesome. Okay, second to last question here. How do you hope you'll be remembered by Four Screen fans someday when you've left?
As a guy that I think was hopefully a good manager, of course, but somebody that led the club in the right way.
Love that. Nice. All right, last question here, and maybe the most important one. What do you think of Cheltenham? This can win you a lot of fans back, just saying.
Yeah, I'm not so keen.
I'm not so keen. We'll take that. Diplomatic. I'm not so keen.
What do you think of not so keen?
Cheltenham. We are not so keen on Cheltenham. Let's get that chant going. Let's go. Yeah, Ian Birchnell, man, thank you so much for hanging out with us, man. It's been a
Thanks
pleasure.
Thanks for making the time. Yeah,
we kept you for way too long. If we lose tomorrow against Peterborough, blame us. Don't blame Ian because we kept them up. Yeah. Sack us.
We'll get that chant going.
Sack the heavens, devil.
Get Nathan out.
Yeah, that's right. Get Nathan out. Man, I can't tell you how much we appreciate this. This was an awesome, awesome chat. You really kind of opened all of our eyes really to who you are off the pitch and on the pitch. Your philosophy was just beautiful stuff. One last thing here. You can't spell Ian without N. Birchnell in, baby. I'm in there. Let's
Birchnell
go.
In.
There we go.
Ian, man, thank you so much. Appreciate you. Best of luck this season. Man, thanks, you're going to keep us up. Yeah. We appreciate you coming on, man.
Yeah. Pleasure, lads. It's been great. Thank you.
Ian Birchnell. Oh, I'm so glad we got to talk with him, Shimmy, because he completely changed, you know, my perception. And hopefully, I think a lot of fans' perceptions. It was an excellent chat. He is a very cerebral person, as we've seen. And also, he just showed vulnerability. He showed his dedication to the club, passion. He's just so kind, humble, and kind of like what we've heard from everyone who, you know, everyone we've spoken to who knows him. Yeah. It all kind of came through today.
And we know he has a philosophy. Yeah, same. I'm completely with you, Nathan. We see that he has a philosophy. Sometimes these things take time to implement.
Yeah.
And the season is young, but as you said, you know, just a huge fan of Ian's now. Getting to actually know the person, you know, behind the image that we see. And sometimes the image isn't always positive, right? When we see kind of fan interactions and things like that. But after today, I can't help but throw my entire support behind him, behind the lads, behind this club. Come on.
Yeah. Oh, me too, man. I'm Shimmy, you can't spell Ian without N. Birchnell in, baby.
Birchnell
in. Let's go. Let's go. And we also have, thanks to Ian, a new chant. Let's go.
What do we think of Cheltenham? We're not so keen. What do we think when we're not so keen on things?
Cheltenham. Thank you.
That's all right.
We're not so keen on Cheltenham. Not so keeners. All right, Shimmy. Anyway, a huge thank you to Ian for taking his time, you know, time out of his day, time away from his family to hang out with us two idiots.
Yeah. I think it shows how much he does care about the fans, you know, regardless of maybe the perception up till now. He's willing to put the time forward and you know, I think he wants to be a part of this FGR community, and we got to welcome him, you know.
100%. And as I said, like in the chat, like I wasn't
At first, I was sold on him, and then I wasn't. I was kind of out on him, and he's kind of won me back, Shimmy. He's won me back. So I think we got to give him more time to implement everything. He has had incredibly bad luck in terms of injuries, in terms of the transfer window. So we got to give him time, and I think he's going to come good. I think by the end of the season, we're gonna be thankful we had him, because I think he's going to keep us up, Shimmy.
Let's go, baby. You know, let's and go. Again, support and positivity can't hurt in that, you know?
Amen. All right, Shimmy. Let's go to Steve from the Port Vale podcast, the Ale in the Vale pod, to help prep us for Port Vale on Saturday. Let's go, Steve.
Yeah, Gooner Steve.
Gooner Steve, that's right. We recorded this during the Arsenal-Liverpool game. He was watching. actually, both of you were watching the game in the middle of
yes.
the chat.
Yeah, all right, here we go. So it's the highest level of conversation, of course.
Boom. We go behind enemy lines today to the beautiful city by the sea, the Tuscany of England, Burslem, United Kingdom, where we welcome in Steve Hayden from the Ale in the Vale podcast, a Port Vale podcast. Welcome, Steve.
Hey, Steve.
Evening, sports fans. I don't think anyone's ever introduced Burslem quite like that before. And I'm not sure anybody from England would recognise that description. I live about 5 miles away from there, but I'm happy with that. I think it's something we could go with. I'm going to send it on to the guys. But yeah, how are
Let's
you two
go.
Doing?
Yeah, doing well. Yeah, we had Stu and Johnny on a couple years ago.
Yeah.
And we didn't know anything about Port Vale, so we just tried to guess where it was located. And because it's called Port Vale, we assumed it was like by the sea because of the port.
Yeah.
But we found out, no, it's nowhere near a sea. It's in the middle of Stoke.
Yeah. And Stu's relocated to Canada now. He lives in Vancouver.
Yeah, I heard he left you. I heard he left the pod.
Yeah, he did. Yeah, he still does. Comes on. So yeah, but Stu's in Canada. I don't know if he'll ever come back. He may do. He came back for Wembley last year. He came back for Wembley in the playoffs.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, worth it. You got to make that trip.
Yeah.
Yeah, he flew into England for about, I think it was 2 days in and out.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, but so he did that.
Incredible.
Nice. Well, yeah, so let's get on to the Vale, my friend. Well, first, before we get into the football, we like to do a little segment called Fashion Police. There's a segment where we rate whoever we're playing, we look at their kit, and we rate their kit, and we ask you to do the same. So are you in for Fashion Police?
Yeah. I'm a Perfect. Big fan.
This is also the most confident police. Thing we feel opining about when it comes to League One football. So.
Yeah, we don't know anything about football, but we do know fashion. So here we go.
Nails, hair, hips, heels, face done, lips real, purse full, big bills. Yes, I'm a big deal.
So I had very low expectations for you guys. After the last time we did Fashion Police, which was a couple years ago, and we ranked your kit the worst kit in League Two.
Really?
The worst kit I ever seen. Yeah, the Robbie Williams design, I think it was. Geometric rectangles converging into a triangle. Actually, it was on that episode. I think Johnny taught us the term Marmite kit. He said it was a Marmite, Marmite kit.
Yeah, that's it, a Marmite, yeah.
Okay, yep.
Where you either love it or you hate it. There's no in-between.
In-between.
So for us, we were on the hate side. It was the worst kit we'd ever seen. However, we moved to this year, and things have changed quite a bit. The all-white kit with some crazy sleeve design, and I absolutely love it. Love the contrast between the plain white torso against the crazy sleeves. And not only do the sleeves look cool and crazy on their own, but when you dig a little deeper, those sleeves are actually brilliant because they are Vale Park. It's just like...
They are. I was going to tell you that. Yeah, they are.
Yeah.
They are all
it's a stadium.
Yeah.
I love that.
Incredible.
It's brilliant. Yeah. And then the sponsor is usually what screws it up for most League One and League Two clubs, because they have these stupid off-color
like carpet
things.
Cleaners.
Yeah, carpet cleaners in like crazy colors. Actually, Bolton Wanderers, we just played Bolton Wanderers, we did their kit, and they have this like neon green sponsor, which makes no sense on their kit.
Yeah,
however, yours stays nice and black. It matches the colors. Synaptic Solutions, I think it is. It's a weird holographic logo. But I appreciate that they kept it, you know, not without the ugly colors. So well done. I love this kit. In my opinion, it's the best kit we've come across so far in League One. I'm going 8.9 out of 10. Let's go Sham, and then we'll go to you, Steve.
Ooh, okay. Well, Nathan, I'm with you. This is also a Marmite kit, but we love Marmite now. That's what we've decided today. It's, put this kit on some toast. It's perfect. But I do have to say,
I feel like maybe a little bit of inspiration for Forest Green Rovers, even though it's the, you know, on the sleeve, I respect that it's the stadium, but a little bit of the same sort of scheme. It kind of from a distance has sort of a zebra look to it. But I also love the away kit. I kind of love these jagged patterns, and even the keeper kit that's like purple and green. I love the flair with that. Just a little bit of fun. Reminds me of actually New Orleans and Mardi Gras a little bit. So I say from last time, which was kind of like we thought was maybe an optical illusion to cause like opponents to falter with their vision on the pitch. That really hurt the eyes. Sorry, Robbie Williams. But yeah, they really turned it around on this one. And the shorts. All the shorts are fire. I love the trim on the shorts.
Yes.
So for me, I'll give it a 9 out of 10. Give it a 9
out of 10. All right, Steve, what do you got?
Yeah, well, last year we somewhat controversially ditched the black off the kit. Vale been black and white since time began, and we went for an all-white Vale Madrid, you might say. And as a purist and someone, I'm glad the black and white is back. I also wasn't a big fan of the Robbie Williams one. So this kit's the best we've had for a few years, and the away kit, the blue kit, is, whilst it's a brand new design, if you go, I'm like 46 years old, so if you go back to about 1990s, we had a kit similar to that, and that became a bit of a cult classic. So I'm on board with this year's kit, I have to say. But again, I have a strict rule that once I hit 40, I was not going to be wearing a replica shirt anymore. But I've got an 11-year-old son who's got every kit there ever has been since he's been around. So I'm on board with both the kits this year. I think they're a big improvement. And yeah, and as long as we're in black and white, I'm reasonably happy. But yeah,
I love decent. It. Can we get a score out of 10?
The kit this year, yes. I'm going to go 9 because the last ones have been so bad. And this has been a real, yes. real step up.
Maybe yes, that was a long-term great. Strategy. Just have these horrendous kits yeah. for a few years. Genius. And then.
To be fair, last year's white kit was a decent kit. It just wasn't a decent Port Vale kit. And I think you have to differentiate between the two.
It was white and gold, right? If I remember,
White and gold. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Vale playing black and white, and that's the way it should just be.
Real Madrid. I love that. All right. So that was Fashion Police. So here we go, Sham. Port Vale, you're under arrest.
You're up. Sorry. I could tell you missed it.
What, yes. You're watching the Liverpool goal?
I've just seen that. Yeah.
I'm under arrest.
You're under arrest, Sham. All right. Out of Fashion Police. I don't play, I slay. I don't walk, I strut, 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 and then sashay. Here we go, on to the pitch. So, Steve, just tell us, what were the expectations going into this season, and how have you performed to those expectations so far?
Okay, League One can be split into two. The top 12 and then the rest of us, which Forest Green are in. The top 12 have got big, big budgets. The likes of Vale and Forest Green haven't. Our aim is to be the top of the bottom half, basically. Mm-hmm. And we are about there at the moment. Yesterday, I went to watch Vale at Derby, and that win was really bad news for you guys because we'd taken a couple of bad beatings, and there was a lot of pressure on the Forest Green game because we all expected to get turned over at Derby, and we need to beat teams like you guys in the same way that you guys need to beat teams like Vale. But mm-hmm. going to Derby and picking up those 3 points gives us a massive lift and takes the pressure off us a bit for tomorrow. I mean, you guys lost some players in the summer. Your wing-backs were quality, I remember, from last year. Mm-hmm. And you lost both of those, didn't you? So,
yeah.
And you're not as strong as you were. So we're doing about where I'd expect us to be. We've taken a couple of what, to use an English football term, doings, where we've been turned over and not really shown up. But our aim is to stay in League One. If we can stay in there comfortably, then that's good. And to be competitive in every game. And we've just about achieved that. Some games we were never likely to win, but the games we should have done well in, we have done. And yesterday was a proper bonus and one of the best days of football. I've watched lots of Port Vale games in lots and lots of different places, and yesterday was right up there. If you can find some YouTube clips, the atmosphere was bouncing. It was good. But that's bad news for you guys, I think.
Yeah. So be honest, Steve. Yeah, how tempted were you to put a kit on? I know you're past 40. After yesterday, how tempted were you? Never?
No, No, no.
A man of his code. Man with a code.
Man with a code.
I'm a man. Yeah. I don't know if you've ever seen The Wire. Have you ever seen The Wire?
Yeah, Omar.
Yeah, man's got to have a code. I think that was Bunk, not him. Yeah.
Oh, I love it.
I like American TV as well. Sopranos is the best show ever.
Oh, I love Sopranos. Love Sopranos. Talking about the four teams that got promoted last year, Exeter City, Port Vale, Bristol Rovers, Forest Green. Exeter are just flying. They're just running through this league. You guys are also doing, you know, you're holding your own. Bristol Rovers and ourselves are struggling at the moment. I feel like it's partially because like Exeter kept pretty much their whole team and their manager, even though they just lost him, but they kept him at the start. Bristol Rovers, Forest Green Rovers, both of our teams have lost a lot of really important players to our squad this season. So I'm guessing, is Port Vale similar to Exeter where you really kept a majority of the squad? And is that why you think you've been so successful so far?
Yeah, Vale. I went to watch Vale at Exeter, which is quite a long way away by English standards last year. We turned them over. We went down there recently and they absolutely battered us 4-0. And 4-0 flattered us. Exeter had a good side and they were ready to go up and had been for a while. We built an entire new team last year. We've kept the nucleus of that this year, but we've also made a couple of really important signings. Ellis Harrison, our centre forward, scored his sixth goal of the season yesterday, and he's a real, real handful. So it'll be a problem for you. So we've kept the nucleus, but we've added to it. So yeah, we did well in the summer. We were slow in the transfer market, but eventually our targets landed. So the nucleus of last year, plus a couple of signings this year, have made us stronger, and think that will stand us in good stead. I'm confident that we're going to finish mid the table or just below mid table. You know, we're not going to do any better than that, but we're up there. I think the two teams like you guys and Bristol Rovers are the two more likely to struggle for different reasons.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so, let's move on to Saturday.
let's move on to therapy.
So what do you expect? What are your expectations for Saturday? What do you think is going to happen, Steve?
I think we'll win. I've been on two other away fans podcasts and I predicted we'd lose both times because I just think we're not the strongest side. But you guys are struggling at the moment and it's a game that really, to cement our place in League One, we've got to win. And I think we will do. I mean, you lost your manager and stuff like that, although he's since been sacked by Watford, which is no great surprise to anybody who knows about Watford. They go through managers like very, very quickly.
Yeah. I'm surprised they don't just call carousels in England Watford now. Watford.
Yeah. So there's not much job security down that way. But I think we should win, and I think we will win. If you guys can take anything off us at all, that's a decent result for you. You know, if you can scrape a draw somehow or a 1-0 win, which would be a dream for you, I suppose. Now, we'll be disappointed. Agreed. For Vale games, these are must-win games for us.
Well, little you know, though, we just turned our season completely around. We beat Bolton Wanderers on Saturday, and now it's over. We're not losing again, so I'm sorry. Yeah. Your expectations are going to be completely off on Saturday. But give us your score prediction, and we'll get out of here.
I think we'll win 2-0.
2-0.
James Wilson to score the first goal, and you can drop me a DM when I'm horrifically wrong, and I'll come back on and eat some humble pie for you.
All right,
it'll be vegan. All right, the humility will be vegan.
First goal scorer.
Sorry.
Should we put our money on that?
Yeah, put your money on James Wilson, first goal scorer.
All right.
You cannot go wrong. You will be the pound against the dollar is very weak at the moment, so you will be printing dollars, which is worth 10 times more than it used to be. So
Oh, I love it. Well, Steve, thank you so much for joining us, man. Best of luck this season. I hope you guys stay up with us, especially with those nice kits. But worst of luck on Saturday. I hope we demolish you on Saturday, but good luck the rest of the season. Yeah. Let's both stay up. Steve, thank you for joining us, my friend.
Thanks, Steve. Cheers, guys. Enjoy. All the best.
Cheers, man. Cheers.
All right, Shimmy. Two huge games coming up for the Forest Green Rovers. Shimmy, what do we got? Tuesday, we got Peterborough away. The posh, as they're called. We'll have someone on from Peterborough next time when we have a Saturday match. We can't preview Tuesday matches. It comes too fast. But what do you got, Shimmy? Peterborough are currently 7th in the table.
We just beat
6th in the table. Keep that in mind.
I know. They're up there. So, again, this is not a match we are supposed to win. But neither was Bolton. So, I want to ride this momentum. I want to ride the good vibes of talking to Ian Birchnell. And I'm going to give us I'm going to predict the Forest Green Rovers win. Okay, we're going to keep riding Luke McGee's talents, and I think we're going to win 2-1.
2-1, and this is Luke McGee's old team too, by the way. He loved playing at Posh, not as much as he loved playing at Forest Green, of course. 2-1, I'm going another clean sheet, back-to-back clean sheets, 2-0 to the Forest Green Rovers. Dom Bernard and Wickman, light the wick, Connor Wickham is scoring the second one. 2-0, nice. We keep a clean sheet. Defense is organized. We know
we're
going to
show.
Doing.
It wasn't a fluke, McGee.
This
is Luke McGee. Two clean sheets in a row. I love it.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Boom. Done. 2-0 against Peterborough. And then, of course, we play the Valiants of Port Vale on Saturday. Shimmy, our guy who came on, what did he predict? 3-0 Port Vale?
I think he predicted a pretty strong and resounding win because he said it's a game where they had to beat us, so they would.
But they won't, Jimmy. We're going up to Vale Park. It's away, right? Actually, I don't remember. I think it's away. Yeah, it's away.
Yeah.
Okay. We're going to Vale Park. Jimmy, what are we doing at Vale Park?
We're going to enjoy the beautiful sea view.
Yes.
Port Vale. That's what we're going to do. But no, you know what?
For a reason, right? It must be on the water.
Yeah. But, you know, I agree with Steve on one thing. Steve has a very strong policy of not wearing kits past the age of 40. He's left it to his children, and he lives vicariously, stylishly through them. And, you know, I think I sort of agree. It's like you get diminishing returns as the dad bod comes into full bloom. But I can't agree with Steve on the outcome. You know, we're going up there. I think we're going to just keep going, you know? It's like we're going to play. We've played fairly strongly on the road, you know? I mean, I would say better than up to Saturday how we played at the Bolt New Lawn. So I feel like we're going to keep the momentum going, and can't agree with Steve on this one. We're coming out.
Score.
We are going to win 2-1.
2-1 again. All right, I'm going 3 clean sheets in a row though, Shimmy.
I love it. I love it.
I'm flipping Steve's score on him. He said 3-0 Port Vale, I think. I don't remember, but I think he said 3-0 Port Vale. I'm going 3-0 Forest Green Rovers. Ooh. Dom Bernard, hat trick. Keep a clean sheet. 3-0 Forest Green Rovers against Port Vale. And we get the season back on track. 2 wins in a row. Actually, that'll be 3 wins in a row. Man, we'll be flying. I don't know where we'll be up the table. We'll be like steadily in mid-table at that point. Anyway, I love it, Shimmy. Let's keep the good vibes rolling. Let's back
no Fluke McGee. It's Luke McGee.
That's right.
Let's get the clean sheet.
The boys.
Screw what I had to say. Screw my prediction.
Wait, you already made a prediction.
And I said screw my predictions.
Oh, because you said 2-1.
I said 2-1, yeah.
Yeah, screw your prediction. We're keeping a clean sheet, Shimmy. All right, Shimmy, let's get out of here. Back the boys. Let's back Coach Ian. Let's back the team. Let's bring that positivity. They need it right now. We all need it right now. If we're going to survive this league, we need positivity. Let's bring that atmosphere to Peterborough. Let's bring that atmosphere to Port Vale. Let's get 2 more wins, baby. Up the Vegan Rovers.
Up the Vegan Rovers. We are FGR. And you know,
we gotta praise him. Praise Dale. Yeah, brother. Thank you all
baby.
For listening. Back the boys. Back Ian. Let's turn this season around. Let's go, baby.
Woo! Woo!
In the words of Sham and I in the documentary.
Woo! Woo! Immortal words. Immortal words. Let
right,
that
let's
be it on our epitaphs.
All right, Shimmy. Let's get out of here. Thank you all for listening.
Bye, everybody. Thanks.
Take us home, Big Time Tommy.
How you doing, Forest Green Rovers? It's Big Time Tommy. You guys have
not so
lately, but not this time. You guys are going out there and you are playing
Peterborough and Port Vale,
and you guys are gonna win. Captain America, Ben Stevenson, High Octane, MPH, Vegan Henry, Armani Little, JMT, he's dynamite, and Light the Wick, Connor Wickman, Golden Boot, Dom Bernard Skeletor, and do not forget, Corey O'Keefe, Cool Hand Luke McGee. You guys are going to go out there and play like a team. Forget about all your other losses.
Don't forget.
Last game, you're concentrating on this game. When you play
Peterborough and
you're
going to
play like a brand new team. Pass the ball, set up, defense, offense, and your goalie, I don't know who it is, but you better play like you've never played before. I want high-scoring game, great defense, and everybody to play this week's game like no other game. A big win. You guys need to beat
Peterborough and Port Vale.
And just remember one thing. FGR for life. Just like OS for life. Take it easy. Win the game. Win, win, win. Let's go, guys.